This is RSBNB Update, episode 576, recorded Thursday, July 14th, 2016, A Descent into Insanity. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update once again this week. Dave is away this week as he had pre-existing commitments that might or might not involve Pokemon. So, yeah, as you can see, that's still having a major role among lots of people around RSBNB and, in general, the gaming community. I was in the clan chat earlier, Clan Quest, great clan if you guys need one and enjoy questing. The discussion was purely focused on Pokemon and not RuneScape, if you can believe it or not. Someone actually went Pokemon hunting in a graveyard near their house in Clan Quest, so. Yeah. Anyways, this is of course not Pokemon Update as we had suggested it might have become last week. This week, Tyler's back.
Hello.
And also joining us is Mr. Bistro from RSBNB Informer.
Hello.
And there might be some question as to why these two people in particular are here. Initially this week we planned to discuss the evolution of combat 4 years in, but there's just too much news this week to do that, so we're just going to do a regular podcast. And the first piece of news that we really ought to discuss is confirmation of Jagex's being acquired by the Chinese Hongda Mining Company. So back in March, it was announced that they had a tentative deal to be negotiated in place by April 30th for $300 million to purchase Jagex and invest in the company, which is, of course, the Chinese Hongda Mining Company. So basically, the deal has gone through, and I quote, "After the necessary period of due diligence, that offer has come to fruition and Jagex has been acquired by Chinese investors." Then the news posting goes on to quell some fears about what does this mean for the games and for you as a player. And in general, the reaction is that everything is mostly going to stay the same and the investors are happy with the current trajectory of the game and they want them to keep doing it. So that means a continued commitment to RuneScape, old-school RuneScape, Chronicle, and, of course, everything else that Jagex is involved in. So not much else beyond the confirmation here in the news posting, but does this shock you guys that we heard about this today?
Actually, no. It doesn't really surprise me that much. I knew it was coming up soon. I hadn't heard anything for a while. As for what it all means, I'm not sure yet either.
Yeah, and when you look that far into, you know, the crystal ball of investors and whatnot, obviously a company looks to be sold off for a specific reason from the previous investors, or they can get a better deal from this new batch of investors. And, you know, one thing that has constantly been in the forefront is the operating profits of Jagex and the fact that they have been, you know, hovering at below £1 million per year in terms of net profit. So I think, I mean, I'm not a full-blown investor here or anything like that, but I think that that might have had some bearing on the IVP investors' decision to move this off to a different corporation and specifically a Chinese corporation to increase the game's reach in China, which is practically non-existent at this point. So, Tyler, you have any thoughts on how this will go going forward, and was it a shock to you?
I don't think it was a shock. I'm kind of glad that IVP is leaving as the majority shareholders, mostly because, like, under them, a lot of the, like, microtransactions really flourished and whatnot. I am kind of happy in a sense that we'll probably see an expansion into the Chinese market, especially if that just means more players joining the game. especially more new players joining the game.
Yeah, and, you know, there's an interesting thing. You know, the language of business and whatnot is, of course, English. So you can have, you know, large areas of, you know, Beijing and Hong Kong, for example. And there's another large city in China that is fairly popular with Western businesses. I'm forgetting the name right now. They have one of the biggest casinos in the world. I don't suppose anyone knows offhand.
No.
Okay. But, so, you know, just the fact that China right now is a developing country that is opening up to the world, despite what its government might think otherwise, and the amount of money that is available in that market is something or somewhere that every corporation wants to be. You can see it, you know, in Facebook's actions, Apple's actions, and now, of course, Jagex's actions with this. So it I think, is a smart strategic decision, but there is a caveat that, you know, I think the people at Jagex have to, you know, kind of have a bit of a thought about in their own minds going forward, even if they're not mentioning it here, is that the Chinese companies, specifically the Chinese game publishers, are always less wary of bringing out microtransactions into the game as they are would be if they were from another country. So, of course, you know, there's nothing on the roadmap saying anything like that is going to happen. But for me personally, that's probably the biggest concern going forward, is that the Chinese companies are more willing to go down that path. And, I mean, we've seen examples before of how powerful the microtransaction-based economy is in RS. And the question is, would we really want it to get that much more powerful here? So that's something we're going to have to watch going forward as well. So, but it, for now, based on what we've been told, it looks like the development path is going to continue straight on as it's been going, which is always good stability-wise and, you know, not spooking any players, because well, that doesn't really work out well for RuneScape, as we've found numerous times in the past. So, overall, okay, so you guys both seem to feel it's a good thing then, yeah?
I'm really on the fence. I almost want to lean towards no. But,
all right, why is that? If it,
the reason, well, first of all, in this forum post, they said that things are going to stay the same, but I have to disagree.
Yeah.
If the total sales was that deplorable that one company is trying to pawn it off to another one for profit, you think that they would want to keep doing the same strategy? I mean, of course not.
Yeah, of course they're going to say that, right? But
yeah.
But money talks in this world.
Yeah, and the most easy way I can see that happening is more microtransactions.
Yes.
And this market, it's ripe for it. So,
exactly. Exactly.
I mean, it just goes hand in hand. You cannot not see that they're going to add more microtransactions in order to boost those profits because they've been so deplorable.
Right. And I mean, when you think about it, what kind of stuff could you add to RS aside from, you know, increasing the membership fee isn't really a good thing to do because it's accessible where it is right now, $9.99 for new subscribers, which, I mean, is a smart price compared to things out there like World of Warcraft. And then there's always people who are going to, you know, want that extra edge, and I don't think there's any getting around that. So I think you're entirely right on that. Tyler, you share any of those same concerns?
Yeah. Somewhat. I don't know. Maybe it's a bit naive, but I'm a little bit more trusting of Jedex and Jagex, and I don't know. I think that the Chinese company wouldn't have bought it for such a relatively good price if
yeah.
Or relatively high price, like good for IVP selling it off, if they didn't think that the game as it is good enough.
Right.
I can agree that they might think, oh, well, this led to this increase in revenue, so let's try that again. But I don't know. I think that for at least a little bit, they'll try to keep it the same.
Because if you invest in something, you keep it because you're making a profit off it. Which, as I've mentioned before, we saw JX yearly profits go from north of £1 million down, you know, to just breaking even, and then back up this year to about $300,000, give or take. So it's a question in the back of everyone's minds going forward. And, you know, Mr. Bistro, you're right. Microtransactions, easiest way to do that.
Yeah, and that being said, I don't want to, like, fearmonger
right,
a little bit.
Right.
But it's really, really hard to get Western games.
Yep.
Microsoft is the perfect example of this, to get it in, like, that side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just – it's been proven time and time again. So if I – would have a really hard time seeing RuneScape doing as successful as I'm guessing these investors want it to be. It's an MMO. It's a Western style MMO. And those games haven't gone over very well. You know, if they're going to want to try and open up to a new market, that a lot of time is going to have to be put into doing some translations.
Yeah.
You know, getting all that set. So next year could be a pretty, I'd almost say a dry year for updates, because so much stuff is going to need to be fitted for a whole new player base.
Yeah, and also not to mention there's different, you know, cultural requirements and whatnot as well, because there are some things, you know, in TV shows and whatnot, and games in particular that go on just fine in the West, but are come under very intense scrutiny in Asia and whatnot. So, and I mean, we don't want to sound fear-mongering here. That's something that this podcast doesn't do. But, you know, this is, I think, the what comes with the territory of going into China. China is a huge country. We were discussing this in pre-show, and they have become such a huge juggernaut, largely to a fluke of, you know, Western powers not wanting to step on their toes, that most of what China says in terms of market share, whether it be here with the RuneScape product or with your manufacturing of smartphones, has to go as a fact, and, you know, what's ultimately going to be accepted in terms of the terms. So basically, that means is that if it works in China and they are going to be making a profit off this, then you can expect it to come into RS. So it just comes with the territory. It's like, you know, you hear these stories about the workers who assemble iPhones and whatnot, who are, you know, paid low wages, and people don't necessarily like that condition, but that comes with the territory of doing business in China and having to, you know, reap the benefits of having low-cost smartphones, right? So it just comes with the territory of China. And that city I was looking for, by the way, is Macau. Very Western-centric city. Has a huge gambling industry there. So lots of up-and-coming cities there.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think for me, the thing that I am most concerned about personally, and whenever I have an option of, you know, looking at where a product is made and then seeing if there's an alternative, I always go for the product that's made in the West. So granted, this is still going to be made in the UK by the UK developers, but a portion of what we're sending over there does unfortunately have to go to China, and I don't know how I feel about that. So it's like if Apple had an option to have an iPhone that was made purely in the US, I would gladly take that, even if it meant having to fork over a premium for it. So that's my biggest concern, but that's probably more of a moralistic concern over any kind of factual concerns, I think. But that's just me. So I think for the next year or year to 18 months, we can probably expect the same course. Might be sooner before we start seeing changes, but the thing is that with a change in investors, you can always expect some kind of change. I don't think any kind of, you know, corporate takeover has happened where the end users have not felt a change.
Yeah, I completely agree, because I've been through two corporate takeovers and I've only had two jobs.
Yeah.
So I know firsthand that changes do come, even when the higher-ups say that things aren't really going to change. Of course they're going to change.
Exactly. So, and I think the message I have, just in closing this off to the other players out there listening, is that, you know, for now the game is the game that you still love and enjoy playing, so just go out and play it, and if an update comes around that, you know, appears to be not what would have happened before, then that's the time we can start talking about it. But for now, I think we just continue on the path that we're on. That's the safest course of action, and I encourage everyone to do that. You guys have anything else before we move on to the next topic for the week?
Nope.
Well, I would say that, yes, the game's probably going to stay the same. We might actually start to hear what some of the future plans are coming up in RuneFest.
Right. Right.
But I would also hesitate to say not to pass judgment once we start to see some of these first updates come out, because maybe there's a bigger picture that we don't know.
Yeah, and it might be better for us at the end of the day. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's something that I think really needs to be hammered home with the RS community. They're very quick to jump to conclusions about whether or not that be good or bad, case in point being the evolution of combat way back when. So, all right. So our next update this week is the Port Sarum Invasion and Eastern Lands Crew mini quest. So the Port Sarum Invasion is a temporary event running from this week until July 25th. It's to kind of get you in the spirit of dealing with a reworked Port Sarum, kind of like the Falador event that happened last year and the event that happened in the lead up to God Wars Dungeon 2. So it uses the same mechanics as both of those, actually, with a daily cap of tokens that you can earn. Then you can turn those into supply caches, which give, you know, weapon overrides, XP lamps, and a chance of getting a Skull's Pirate Cape. So basically just a way to get some free XP in the various skills while touring around Port Sarum. So you guys had a look at this?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
I enjoyed it. I think Port Sarum looks really nice now.
Yeah, it does. And
although it is on fire, but
yeah, I mean, hopefully that will change going forward, right?
Yeah, hopefully not like no Edgeville.
Yeah, no Edgeville.
Yeah.
At the event, you can do a number of activities, including attacking the pirates, which of course gives you combat XP, making cannonballs, which gives you smithing or herbler XP based on whether you make the actual balls or if you mix together the gunpowder, which is of course herbler XP. Making batches of gunpowder also is the part that gives the herbler XP, and repairing prison walls, which gives you crafting or construction XP. And then of course you can just fire the cannon for some good old fashioned fun, which gives you ranged or fire making XP. And you can toggle what kind of XP you get with the token that you first get when you come to the event. So, really user intuitive, I think, this time around for the XP and where you're going to be doing this, because it's all centralized into one place up on the roof of the jail, unlike the Falador event, which was kind of spread out in various camps and you had to run around a lot. So, I like the way this is implemented, and I'm going to agree that the graphical update is pretty nice. So,
yeah, it does make the whole Port Sarum though look once again smaller.
Yeah,
because everything is so much bigger now.
Right, and then of course in the background you pan the camera up, and oh, lo and behold, there's the Wizard's Tower. So
and Draenor Village.
Right. So I mean, this is, you know, something that happens with EOC, I think, because you can see so far. And it would be nice if it felt as though the distance were further, but, I mean, they already did what they could for that with the evolution of combat. Oh, my. Oh, wow. No, not the evolution of combat. Sorry. NXT new game client. So, aside from drastically altering the map, they really can't do anything to fix that problem, which is kind of unfortunate because you do kind of want to observe this entire area. And I can only imagine, you know, if you're playing RuneScape on something that was virtual reality capable, how it would feel. It's like, oh, okay, I'm going to go for a walk from Port Sarum to Draenor. And, oh, Draenor's right next to me. It's right there. So I don't know. But yeah. That's a minor niggle.
It feels a little bit more organic over in the western side of the map, though, because of all of the openness.
Right.
The eastern side of RuneScape just kind of lacks.
Yeah. And, you know, that's entirely true, because everything just gets plopped in there. So, graphical updates these days are really great in terms of production quality, so I don't think there's anything to complain about with that. The event itself is very streamlined and concise, and starting this past Thursday, there's actually the Boat to the Ark event, which is an add-on to this that basically you start each day with 100 tools, and if you complete all the various days, this basically goes for a week until the 27th, you will end up getting all the rewards from it, which is a backpack and some skilling lamps along the way. It's the skilling backpack. It's warning your back slot has a number of charges, and each time you use it, you'll get 10 minutes of a flat XP boost to your skilling. And additionally, once per charge, it'll drop a fantastic item like proteins or silverhawk feathers. Once you have unlocked the backpack, the more you progress throughout the event, the more powerful its XP boost will become, up to 5%. And the more charges you will have for it, up to 50. And then once the charges run out, it's just a cosmetic item. And even though this is billed as this week's Treasure Hunter promotion, the tools are purchasable by loyalty points as they were with the Heart event, which is just amazing. So glad they're doing this again.
Yeah, I enjoyed the Unearthing the Sword one with the Falador event, and this is pretty much the same thing.
So yeah, exactly.
I think it's good.
And have you guys noticed how this has been the trend now compared to, doing something large like World Event 1 and 2 and the Tuska World event? They just focus on these smaller two-week events that are more community and player-centric.
Yeah, I think this is their new way of going about world events. I think it's much more well-received, and I think all that story stuff can be saved for the quests.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's still some question about there as to whether or not last year's Tuska event was rigged or not, because the players weren't necessarily doing what they had to do to prevent Tuska from crashing into the planet. So I think that this is a much safer option, both for our characters and for us as players. Now, also with this is the Eastern Lands Crew mini quest, which is the only piece of permanent content that is going to be staying around past the 25th. And this is how you get your first ship to sail off to the Ark. What do you guys think about the fact that we have all this non-permanent content coming into game?
I think it's good in a sense because it makes me feel this like small, not like really super pressing, but this small obligation to, oh, I'm not doing anything for 30 minutes, let me get on and do my 100 tools.
All right.
Whereas if it was permanent content, I don't think I would feel, I would be like, oh, I'll do that in like a year or whatever. So I think it's good in getting people to play now. But yeah, I agree that at the same time. I think at the same time that it's also like dumb that they're wasting all this time on something that not everyone's going to be able to see if they're like on vacation.
Exactly.
Right now.
And I mean, you look back on these news postings or you listen to this podcast in a month and you'll be thinking, oh, what was this event? It's gone, right?
Yeah.
So that's my only concern with, you know, non-permanent content. But I guess if it tells a story, that's all right. So the mini quest, shall we discuss that?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the mini quest is required to get on your way to the Ark when that eventually happens. And it is truly the sense of a mini quest. It's not like the Rag and Bone Man mini quest in that, you know, you have to go hunting around for numerous types of bones or the shadow outfit. quest where you have to go hunt out for the shadows. This one, you basically need to put together your crew, and that involves finding your first mate, your bosun, and who was the other one? The quartermaster for the ship, I believe? So,
and the navigator.
Oh, right, the navigator. Okay. So you got to find three crew members. One of them is the sea singer in Berthorpe. The other one is the sister of Black Knight in Draenor. And the other one is a guy in your own player-owned port who you can find in the bar. So you basically go there and you talk to each of them, and then they will agree to be part of your crew. And you start this by talking to Trader Stan. And then, of course, when you're done, you get the emote called Standing Around. It's a rest emote, which basically has you looking like you're an ADHD character. Well, yeah, because your hands are moving all the time, right?
I actually haven't done the emote yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a resting pose. Sorry, not an emote. But, okay. Yeah. And, you know, I guess this is acceptable to put this out here so we can all just start off with the arc when that first comes out. So, not too much to write home about this, but there's your three locations. Berthorpe, Draenor, and in your port is where you find your three crew members. So, yeah, I believe that's about it this week for the Port Sarum update, unless you guys have anything else you'd like to talk about?
Not really.
All right. Well, then, there are also some changes made to Telos this week, in particular to the Zamorakian ability codex, and they've been monitoring the drops, and they decided that the codex needs changing to better reflect its value in comparison to the weapons. They say since it's not as profitable, many of you have not been using your anima orbs to create the codex, and as a result, they've chosen to remove the anima orb cost and have the ability codex drop directly from the boss, and players who already have the dormant codex will have it converted to the active version. So, I guess that makes sense, because when you think about it, a weapon isn't really nearly as profound as an ability, is it? So, that's good. And that's the ability that takes in damage for a number of seconds and then reflects it out backwards to the enemy. So, there's also been a number of other Telos changes this week that we'll talk about here in the patch notes. So it'd be interested to get your opinion, Mr. Bistro, on how these work and influence the boss fight for you. So I'm going to go through a couple of them right now. Telos is not always attackable with melee when dragged for the tendril attack. Did you experience anything along the line of this? Or I guess you didn't use melee, did you?
No, and I don't know if the tendril attack is the stage 5, but I still haven't fought him on stage 5.
All right. The dialogue from Telos is now clearly displayed in the chat window, and all important mechanic messages now stand out. Would you say there was a problem with that before?
I guess I didn't really notice it.
Okay, so you were just basically fighting based on what the bot was doing then and not following chat.
Yeah.
The word solo has been removed from Telos, the Enrage, from the Telos Enrage world first broadcasts. Okay, of course, it's a solo boss. After 50% Enrage, Telos will now gain the ability to restore his stats periodically. That's interesting.
That's nice.
Yeah, so I guess that makes it harder then, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Telos now kneels when he is in his dormant form. I guess that's good to tell you when it's safe to attack him, because I'm assuming if he's dormant, you don't take any damage from him and he doesn't do anything, right?
Yeah.
All right. The click zone has been removed from the arms in Phase 5. Minions summoned in Phase 5 of Telos no longer regenerate health. Okay, there's another thing that'll make it easier. Animal golems in Phase 3 of the Telos encounter can no longer be killed. What does this mean?
I have no idea. In Phase 3 can no longer be killed. that is really bizarre. I wonder if that means they'll just go away after a certain amount of time, or you have to just deal a certain amount of damage.
Anima golems are the things that are like the QBD shades, right?
Yeah.
Huh.
They were what balanced the bar where you had to keep it in the middle and kill a certain amount of them in order to keep that balance. So Telos would use his like special deadly attack.
So if they can't be killed, then that leads you to either kite them to where you want them or just take the harder boss fight then, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I'll have to run through the boss again and see what that actually means or watch a video on it, because that seems like a breakable kind of update. There has to be something to it.
Yeah, all right. Telos no longer decides to go back to sleep once awoken? I don't
Never had that happen.
Remove broken versions of the Dragon Rider Lance, Shadowglaive, and Wand of the Seer, Elders, and Blade of the Nemora from the Grand Exchange. God Wars Dungeon 2, The Heart, is now displayed on the list of areas on the Clan Notice Board. And, of course, the changes we previously mentioned in the Zamorak Ability Codex. So, alright. So it doesn't seem as though they made it overly easier. I can see that the changes in Phase 5 and Phase 3 might actually make it a bit harder, perhaps?
Definitely for Phase 5. Phase 3, that I can't really say for sure, because there has to be something that goes along with it that I must be missing. Because that sounds like they're breaking it.
So you're thinking you would not have been able to kill the boss had you not been able to kill the animal golems.
Oh, no, it will make it much harder. It just means it really ramps up the amount of, or the speed that you need to kill him in that phase, because I don't know if more than three will be able to spawn, but if you can't kill them, then he's going to ramp up in strength really fast. So
yeah. All right, that's kind of a weird one. But aside from that, the only other thing that jumps out in the patch notes to me is that the Summer of Adventure Sun icon can now be moved in the non-legacy interface mode by dragging it around if the player's interface is unlocked. So that's a good change. I know lots of people were complaining about the fact that it was just, you know, static on the page and there wasn't anything you could do about it. So I'm happy about that. Anything else in the patch notes? I know they're kind of small this week, but that's really all I thought that was interesting.
The issue where music was getting stuck when changing locations.
Oh.
That was a good one. I had that definitely happen in the Java client too. And it wasn't so much the music sticking, but it was more a clipping noise that would kind of get stuck until you closed the client and reopened it.
All right, that's interesting. I know in the Java client and in the EOC client, there's lots of problems that seem to be happening with the music actually not continuing to play and just stopping after a number of times. And I don't know if you guys have that issue on Windows, but it's really apparent on OS X. So that's another client issue that we'd like to see rectified, but I'm glad that they put some effort into the music issue that you just mentioned, so that's good.
And he means the NXT, not the EOC client. There isn't an EOC client.
Oh, I said that again! Oh, thanks for catching that. Wow, what's going on with me on this episode?
You're just so excited to talk about the EOC that unfortunately isn't panning out this week.
That's right. But something that is combat-related, though not necessarily to RuneScape, is that in Chronicle, the RuneScape Legends, they patched it this week, and they brought in the Morvran hero, who is, of course, the Slayer Master Profdinas. And his idea behind how his character works is that he attacks with beasts. So rather than, you know, using mage like Ariane, he'll actually use beast, which is really interesting. Might be an interesting playstyle to look at. And, you know, this kind of encourages me to open up Chronicle again. But I would have to update it on Windows, unfortunately. Also, 37 new cards that are Morphin specific, a new keyword for aggressive monster cards, and a new card family of Slayer tasks, which assign missions that offer a variety of rewards upon completion, such as healing for each monster killed, dealing damage, and drawing additional goblin cards and more. So, some interesting changes to Chronicle this week.
I gotta hand it to Jagex. I like when they continue to release cards. I know that Hearthstone, this was a really big gripe of mine because I'm a Magic player, that there just wasn't enough cards to give me the variety and play style that I want. And if they keep doing this and prevent scope creep, I'll be really happy. Scope creep, I mean power creep.
Yeah, but. Right. All right. Which basically means is that one hero that's supposed to specialize in something ends up specializing either directly or on the fringes that other things, other heroes can do. And they also brought out a card history feature that allows players to look back over the cards that they and their opponents have played throughout the current game. And I'm just going to take this opportunity to mention once again that if this game was out on mobile, I would be all over it. I'm going away next week, and I'm not, you know, taking a laptop with me or anything like that. So, yeah, I think that would be a very good game to have. But unfortunately not.
I agree.
Yeah. Though I could.
I think.
Yeah. I mean.
I think that once they have Chronicle and the Idle Adventures out and on for mobile, that they'll definitely have me sold. I'll be playing RuneScape all the time in some form or another.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that is kind of linked towards the future of the success of Jagex, because, you know, we've seen before that various other platforms and games that they have tried haven't really panned out. So I think that, you know, maybe the Chinese company might be more interested in Idle Adventures or Chronicle than RS, because, you know, that's an interesting thing that I just thought of, Mr. Bistro, because you said that RuneScape is a Western MMO.
Yeah.
Whereas a card game or an Idle Clicker might have a bigger uptake in China. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could definitely see Jagex definitely pouring a little bit more money into their poor brands, i.e. their new stuff. So
yeah. And I mean, that needs to happen, because at the end of the day, whatever is good for Chronicle and Idle Adventures is ultimately going to be good for the RuneScape and Old School, right? Because it just brings more money into the corporation. So, alrighty, that's it for RS updates, unless there's anything else that you guys would like to discuss.
I think that's good. I'm excited for to play Chronicle soon.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Okay, so we do got two questions this week. Thank you to you guys for sending them in with short notice. First up, Colton. Colton's sending in questions again this week, so here it goes. He says, "Hello, hosties. What are your thoughts on examine text? Should Jagex invest the time it takes for localization and all that junk to add their quintessentially British Easter eggs, or is their time best spent elsewhere? 2, please discuss how you feel about voice acting and its exclusion from recent game content. One Piercing Note was a masterpiece in my view, as well as Fate of the Gods. Why completely abandon the concept? And lastly, describe the most recent time when you feared for your life. How long did the panic last? Hope that wasn't too macabre. Much love to you all from Colton." Okay, so examine text. Are you guys examiners?
Occasionally. I don't seek them out, but I more look them up.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Like, when you put, I think it was the Lumbridge Explorer ring into the fire, it had a Lord of the Rings reference to it. Oh, no, that's the Dungeoneering Ring of Kingship.
Oh, okay.
Where text would appear on the ring, like in Lord of the Rings, and it does nothing.
All right. I mean, for me, I always enjoy examine text, like especially among quests and whatnot. And, you know, sometimes if you watch the video of what I do on RS, you'll see that I, you know, click random things and examine them even all these years later. And sometimes I think even clicking people like that is a good thing. So I'm glad they added the examine option to people. So, but yeah, I do think that, you know, examine text is something that they should definitely do. You know, granted, some of it doesn't necessarily translate over from English to, you know, French, Spanish, and Brazilian Portuguese and German or whatever other languages the game is in currently. So I do think examine text is a good thing to have rather than, you know, just saying, oh, this is a bucket when you right-click a bucket. That's not really helpful. So I am good on that one. What about you, Tyler?
I agree. I really enjoy the examine text. I can understand why they don't use a lot of time to create it. But I will say that when I go to places like Ashdale where there's just nothing to examine, I'm like a little sad.
Hmm.
I just feel like there's nothing here for me to get like a little chuckle out of.
Yeah, I agree. So also I think that player examine text is great too. I invite anyone who sees me in game to examine me. I got some pretty good examine info.
Oh, what is it? Can you spoil it?
Well, I guess since this is the podcast, it basically says that I do a RuneScape podcast, and I just say Google RuneScape podcast because it's up there.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, they don't allow URLs.
You're a walking billboard?
Exactly, right? You know I promote this show anywhere I can.
Yep.
Voice acting. How do you guys feel about that?
I think it's completely off the table now, especially with this acquisition. If they want to save some money, the easiest way they can do it is by continuing to not add voice acting so they don't have to factor that into translations.
Yeah. I think voice acting adds a great level of immersion to the game, but it's really expensive. And if it was a choice of having a quest with voice acting or having no quest at all, or rather, I'm sorry, having two quests and they didn't have voice acting, or having, you know, half a quest with voice acting, I would take the two quests without voice acting. I much prefer content rather than relying on voice acting. And yeah, I mean, the voice acting they did was great, but I think it's just too expensive to put in because, you know, you not necessarily need to have not just people reading lines. You need to have people who are actors and putting characters in and whatnot. So I do think that it would be great, but it's just not within the price range right now. So.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoy the quest that they have voice acting, and I think it would be nice if they did it a little bit. I think it's nice to put a voice to the character, although using your imagination is fine and all. I think it's really nice to get like a canonical, this person sounds in this way. Like hearing Braska Prime as like this high-pitched voice really made me think of Braska Prime in a different light.
Interesting. All right.
Which I guess you can add that outside of quest, and you could add it like incrementally over time, but I think it's nice to hear what your favorite characters sound like.
Right, and I mean, if you were voice acting an entire quest line and you couldn't get a voice actor for some reason, they moved or became too expensive, what would you do? That would kind of create a dislink between them. So that's another reason I think that, you know, with how spread out the content is in RS, you can't just, you know, hire a voice actor to voice a certain character in 2016 and then, you know, a year or two later have them come back for this next quest in that series. So I think that also plays into it. And it just doesn't really feel like it's a core RuneScape thing. So it's nice, though it's too expensive, but we get on just fine without it.
Yeah, when they get too expensive, they should just kill them off in Game of Thrones style.
Oh, boy. All right. So lastly, describe the most recent time you feared for your life, and how long did the panic last? So what was the most macabre thing that we've experienced most recently in our life? Let's start with you, Tyler.
So for me, it was actually pretty recently. On Sunday, a friend and I were driving down to Philly, And no fault of his, he was the one driving. A truck swerved into our lane, and he had to like quickly swerve into the next lane. And I mean, the panic wasn't that intense, but it was kind of a lot. But it only lasts for like 5 seconds, and I did honestly in that 5 seconds think, "Oh my god, is he going to like overcorrect? Are we going to go into a ditch or something?" So yeah.
Okay. How about you, Mr. Bistro?
Well, it was a couple winters ago. I was driving back from one city to get home, and it had all of a sudden started blizzarding, like. Really, really bad whiteout conditions because there's snow in the winter where I live. And so I was driving and it was really dark and the freeways had not been like touched at all yet. Like the freeways probably should have been closed. And it was all about like driving in one of the two lanes almost the whole way there, but occasionally you need to get into the other lane because snowplow would be like in front of you. You had to just, you know, get around it. And I did that one time and I hit a patch of ice, I think going like 65 or pretty close to the speed limit. And I almost lost control, and that probably would have ended in flipping the car at that speed, which would not have ended well. So that was pretty terrifying.
Wow. Okay. I can honestly say that there have never been any close calls like that in a car for me. So, and I don't know if I can think of a time when I've feared for my life. I'm going to have to leave this one hanging, I think.
Oh, come on, Shane. There's got to be something.
I can't think of anything, really.
Okay, Shane.
I literally can't. So, all right. Thank you, Colton, for those questions. I like the voice acting one. Alrighty, and then next up we got a question from Wiley. So, hey guys, do you set any strange goals for yourself in RuneScape or in real life? Things like collecting KQ heads or 1 million cabbages like me. Thanks, Wiley. Okay, strange goals?
I can't think of any.
Okay. How about you, Colton? I mean, Tyler. I mean, Mr. Bistro.
Oh, gosh.
I'm starting to lose track of how many times you're saying something else.
This is the Shane Goes Senile edition of RSB and BFB.
Okay.
I'm sorry. What's your name again?
Oh.
Okay.
Are you wanting to start over? Or?
No. Just already off the track here, so just go for it.
Okay.
You might as well leave Tyler's oopsie in earlier as well.
Thanks, Shane.
Okay. Well, I'd say my strangest goal is to fill up my farming tab with all kinds of seeds for herbs. When it comes to needing to, like, get rid of stuff from my bank just so I can get over the head to get a more expensive item in RS, which hasn't happened in a very long time, but I would never touch my seed tab, ever. So I guess that's what it is for me.
All right. I keep all my vials from decanting and from making combination potions, so I am keeping a stack for 120 herb lore. I'm currently all the way up to 12,000. And I have barely just begun. I also keep all my burnt fish, which stacks now. And I keep all my buckets from my super compost that I use. So I don't throw any buckets out. I also don't throw plant pots out. So yeah, I got a few of those collections going on. You know, after I got 120 farming, I was going to auction off my plant pot stack from doing that, but I never did. So I'm just going to keep the farming plant pot stack, I think. But yeah, those are the only kind of things that I keep like that. Wiley, if you're interested, you should look up Alex43 on the RSBNB forums at rsbnb.com/forums. He does crazy stuff in RS like that as well. So I think you and him could have some good discussions about crazy stuff like that.
Great plug.
Thank you. rsbnb.com/forums. And we'll let...
I too save buckets, but I actually save them for uses because when I was running my clan, if someone was doing the Ectofuntis method for prayer, it's a pain in the ass to get all those buckets to fill with slime, so I would go ahead and just give them to other clanmates.
All right. Last question is from Earth. Tyler, you want to give her a read?
Sure. Dear Shane, Tyler, and Mr. Bistro, what kind of monitors do you have? I recently purchased 3 Dell IPS displays on Prime Day, and they are lovely. What is your average daily sodium intake? And finally, what is your opinion of Team Valor in Pokemon Go? That's from Earth.
Oh, those are beautiful questions, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bistro, you want to go first on the monitors or Tyler?
Sure. I have nothing flashy for monitors right now, but I have an HP 1745. I actually have two of those. Their bases allow me to adjust them to whatever height I want and flip them vertical for when I'm doing some programming. Although flipping them vertical doesn't really do much because it's basically a square. And then I also got a couple HP W1907s, which are my better ones. But when it comes to having something flashy like a nice Asus, I don't.
All right. How about you, Tyler?
So I have 2 Dell 22-inch IPS displays that I've had for about a year now, and I really enjoy them.
All right. In addition to my 27-inch iMac, I have 2 Dell. Common trend here, U2312HM 23-inch IPS displays that I got a number of years ago. They were $100 off each, so they were excellent sale, and they are really great in terms of the IPS technology that they use. One of them is showing some burn-in after a number of years, but I mean, that kind of happens when you just position stuff at the same spot on any kind of LCD monitor. The reason I like these, in addition to, of course, the tilt and the rotation, though I never use the rotation, is that they act as USB hubs. Each of them has 4 USB ports on them. Wow. They also support DisplayPort, DVI, and VGA. This is before HDMI was a thing on the Pro End monitors, so great port selection there as well. But yeah, I like the Dell displays. They're pretty good. Rumor has it, though, you can get some pretty good ones from Monoprice these days. Paul, who we do PC gaming with every Tuesday in the RSBNB Discord, which you can find a link to at the bottom of the RSBNB forums at rsbnb.com/forums, got some 27-inch IPS displays that were 4K from Monoprice. So you guys might want to check Monoprice as well if you're ever interested in budget-based displays that are good. So, but yeah.
I have one question for the two of you. Did you guys have to look up your monitor model numbers, or do you just have those memorized?
I have mine memorized.
Oh my God.
Mine are staring right back at my face.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. I can tell you the
HP
model.
HP puts them right on the front.
I can tell you the model of practically everything in my computer, my microphone, my mixer, my mouse, my keyboard. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Sodium intake?
Too much.
Yeah, same. How about you, Tyler?
Probably too much.
Yeah, all right.
I don't have it down to a science, so.
Yeah, neither do I. And, you know, this is the point where Colton was always good to have on the show, is that he had a good pick of the week that allowed you to monitor these kind of things. And, you know, once upon a time, I think I actually said, oh, why doesn't someone just make something so you can plug into the wall and get all the nutrients you need? So, yeah.
The one thing I do have to say, though, is that Shane's sodium output is way too high for a normal person.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure you're pretty salty, Shane.
I don't know about that. I think that there is an underlying motive for this question being asked by Earth, specifically at you, Tyler. But we'll save that for an exercise and the listeners to figure out what that's all about. So what is Team Valor? I've never heard of this.
Okay, so in Pokemon Go, when you reach level 5, you get to decide which team you want to be on out of 3. There is Team Valor, which is red, and they're like people who are, I don't know, they're like people who want to use their Pokemon mostly to become powerful and whatnot. Then there's Team Mystic, who want to study Pokemon and learn a lot about
what's their
like,
color?
Ways they live. Blue. And then the last one is Team Instinct, and they are yellow, and they're kind of like the catch-all for everything that doesn't fall under the first two, I think. I honestly don't really know what they stand for.
All right. And what does Team Valor do that is objectionable?
So Team Valor is like the one that all the assholes join. Just objectively. Oh. Like, no, this is just like the truth. It's like the people who are... There have been a lot of memes that have come out recently since Pokemon Go has become very popular about, like, what the stereotypes for each team is, and the stereotype for Team Valor is pretty much that they're jerks and that they would actually fight you if you took over their gym or something and stuff like that.
Okay. And which one are you a part of?
I'm a part of Team Mystic.
Oh, okay. I honestly don't know what I'd end up joining when the game comes here, so I don't have an opinion of Team Valor because I don't necessarily know what they're all about, but so the general consensus is that they're assholes and trolls?
Trolls, sure.
All right. You have
that
any...
That reminds me of, like, the Triumvirate from a few years back in RuneScape.
Oh, right. That thing never came back, did it?
No, unfortunately.
Yeah.
What are you guys talking about?
The RuneScape Triumvirate. Mr. Bistro, you can explain it.
It was a summer thing where some J-Mods, they kind of organized 3 teams, and you could pick a team, and there was like a red, a blue, and a green team. And everyone that was red was like super combat intensive, so they won a lot of events a lot of the time.
Okay. Yeah, I actually remember that now. So it is kind of like that. Mr. Bistro, do you have Pokemon Go or anything like that?
What's Pokemon Go?
Oh.
Kidding. I'm kidding.
Oh, my God. You'd have to live under a pretty big rock.
No, I don't have it, but I've been exposed to enough of it.
Okay.
So far.
Well, that's it for questions this week, everyone. I think that was a fairly good question segment, given I only had a few hours to throw that together, given what we knew. So thank you, everyone, for sending your questions. No questions topic next week, because this is going to be a pre-recorded episode discussing the use of scales in RuneScape. It's going to be a great one. So look forward to that next week. On to tech news we go.
Sounds good.
So, the general trend here is once again Pokemon Go.
Woo!
Pokemon Go has become the biggest mobile game in U.S. history, surpassing Candy Crush of 2013, Draw Something of 2012, and Clash Royale of 2016. And then following a really low-profile one, Slither.io, back in 2016 as well. And, of course, this is measured by daily active users surpassing well past 20 million and inching up closer to 25 million. And as we mentioned last week, Pokemon Go is now more popular on the app stores than Tinder, which is that blind dating app. So, yeah, this is... quite the statement, I think, given this. If you just look at the graph here, specifically on Android, looks to be around 11 million Android users, the rest coming in from iOS. So, I mean, this has only been out for less than 2 weeks now, and it already feels like it's a major thing. But, you know, there is reason to be cautious going forward that, you know, this might not sustain past a couple of weeks, and it might not be the home run for Nintendo that everyone thinks it has been. So I think just holding off a little bit before making any large pronouncements is obviously a good thing, but it would be really amazing to see a game surpass Snapchat as one of the most popular applications. It's also worth noting that over the span of a week, Nintendo has gained more than $9 billion in value for their shares because of Pokemon Go. So that's a good thing for Nintendo. Now, of course, the question is this sustainable? And what do you do after the initial hype dies down on this game? Because games take a long time to develop. So in a few months, they can't just push out, you know, an expansion or a new version to keep people interested in it. So that's going to be very interesting to watch. And then, of course, there were some account access concerns relating to the iOS version having access to basically a blank check of a user's Gmail account, which you sign into the app with, though that has been patched, and Tyler here has verified that it changes its access even without you deauthorizing the application, so that's good. But yeah, how long do you guys think this thing's going to last for?
I definitely don't think it's peaked yet. It's only available in 5 countries so far right now.
Officially.
Officially. The US, New Zealand, Australia, Germany, and the UK.
Right.
And there are very big, like, it hasn't even hit, like, China, like, as we said earlier, these big countries that could have a huge effect on the total, like, daily users of the app. Although I get that a lot of what you said earlier was just focused on the US.
Yeah,
I think that I agree that the game can definitely, it might, like, lose popularity. It might have, like, this huge spike in popularity for a month or so and then dip off, but I don't think we're anywhere near the peak yet.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting it's not in Japan yet where Pokemon was created.
Yeah. I think that's just because the actual developer, Niantic Labs, is U.S.-based.
And, you know, also on Pokemon, there's been huge Pokemon jets before for Japan Airlines. They have painted numerous airplanes in a Pokemon scheme. So Pokemon really hasn't faded away, regardless of, I don't know, is the TV show still going?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Still the same age.
They have new console games coming out in November.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that Nintendo can take this as a sign that, you know, if their next console flops as bad as their last one, that mobile is
right.
The way for them to go.
And, you know,
because imagine how much money they could get with their first party stuff just strewn across the internet now, you know?
Exactly. And, I mean, with the changes coming to the web browsers and whatnot, there's no reason why it needs to be an application for just iOS and Android. We know Jagex is going to be putting out a WebGL-based client at some point in the next year or so for NXT, so there's no reason why Nintendo couldn't do such a thing for their Pokemon ventures as well, right? So, like, just imagine a free-to-play Pokemon game that kind of had the sense of an MMO. I think that would be the next big thing after Pokemon Go.
So, yeah.
Very interesting to see this and the numbers being reported. And, of course, we talked about it last week, and we are not going to be becoming the Pokemon Go podcast, but if it keeps dominating the news, much like anything else, we may very well have to do that. So, our next piece of tech news relates to Twitter, and Twitter maybe, just maybe, figuring out its niche and how it can be relevant in the modern world. So this week, Twitter has signed a deal with Bloomberg News in order to stream their newscasts. So basically, this deal is kind of like the one with the NFL, except they will be streaming news shows, including Bloomberg West, What Did You Miss, and With All Due Respect. And these will be streamed to Twitter, and they will show ads in the broadcast and also highlights of the show that are shared on Twitter. So if you don't want to commit to the full thing, it's basically going to be a way of getting a newscast on the go from Bloomberg. And one can assume that if this is successful, you'll see other news agencies like CNN and Fox News jumping in on this bandwagon of news streaming by way of Twitter, which I think is the direction Twitter has to go if they want to remain viable. It needs to be about what's happening right now and in the public sphere, and no one does that better than news agencies, I think. So what do you guys think about this possible pivot for Twitter?
It's necessary. That's really all I have to say about it.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is that this is directly going to be competing with Facebook, because a news company or an individual can just start streaming right away and have this feature set on Facebook. So it's kind of a Me Too feature. But the question is that going to drive engagement and keep people on the platform? I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
Yeah. I don't know if it will keep people on the platform. I don't know. I think Twitter might be on its way out, sadly.
Do you use
maybe
it?
Not sadly. Not regularly. When
All
someone
right.
tweets at me or I'm told to look at Twitter, I will use Twitter.
Right.
That's pretty much it.
But you don't like use it as a daily news source or anything like that?
No, definitely not.
Okay. Fair enough.
No. I use it for kind of show-based stuff and a little bit of news. Like, the best example I can have is the episode 9 debacle with Game of Thrones and HBO Now. That's how I found out that they were having some a little bit too heavy of server load in order to actually stream that episode that night for about half an hour.
Oh, okay.
And it was just kind of fun to go through all the rage
comments. See the commentary of that.
Yeah, but that's really all I use it for.
All right. And, you know, Twitter has 300 million users, and it really hasn't grown that much. So I do hope that they will find a way to stay relevant, though I think they do need to make some changes with encouraging people to remain active on it, because right now it seems to be just a follow thing and follow the key high-end accounts that are on the platform. So, and with that being said, it is my primary news source based on, you know, just who I follow and whatnot that forms my news. And I think it works great for that, providing Twitter isn't censoring people, but that's a topic for another show. All right, and then our final piece of tech news this week deals with something people have wanted with Facebook Messenger for quite some time, and that is end-to-end encryption for Facebook Messenger chats. So, what do you guys think? You think that this is something that should be enabled end-to-end or optional, as is going to be happening here?
I think it's good. I don't really care because I don't use that to communicate. I'm kind of fed up, especially now that I'm forced to download an app for it.
Right.
So
not
going anywhere
near it. Well, there's the thing called Messenger.com if you wanted to use that. But I can see why. And, you know, it's interesting the way they're doing this. It's not, you know, going to be a transparent way of chatting between people. It's actually going to just, you know, be a one-to-one secret conversation that's encrypted on each device. So, as an example, if you and I had a secret conversation using this encryption technology and I was to go to a different device, I wouldn't be able to read those messages that were sent, just the way that the system is designed. Which I think is a very good way of doing it and convincing people that it's secure based on what's in the document here that outlines it. And it uses the Signal protocol, which was developed by a company called Open Whisper. And, of course, I won't bore anyone with the technical details, but they have provided all of that right here. And, you know, there are caveats with this, such as that it doesn't work for things like GIFs, videos, making payments, or other high-end messenger features. And of course, the reason for this is that you need to have communication with the Facebook servers for that, which is not necessarily acceptable within this protocol. And as we discussed a number of weeks ago, if you send a link on Facebook, it makes its way to the public API. So that's probably why you can't share GIFs or videos or images with this. So keep that in mind, everyone. It's going to be rolling out this summer to Messenger accounts, and they'll be gathering feedback about it and seeing what people think about it and whether or not it's actually being used. So I'd be interested to see if this becomes a mainstay feature in the Messenger application. So how about you, Tyler? Will this have any bearing on how you use the website?
I don't think there would ever be a use case for me to want to have a secret conversation with somebody. I feel like if it's... I move across devices a lot, so like I'll be on my iPhone or my iPad and then go over to my Mac or my Windows PC, and I like being able to see everything. And I feel like if I'm sharing something sensitive, I would either do that in person or over a phone call. And you could say what you want about over a phone call being maybe not the safest way in some cases if you're wearing a really big tinfoil hat, but I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't think I would trust Facebook Messenger to be my
And I mean, I appreciate the gesture that they're making with this, but I think they honestly blew it with a number of the various privacy stances that they've taken so far with Facebook and the Messenger platform. So I don't think anyone will ever fully trust Facebook Messenger, even though they did acquire WhatsApp. So
you still got to remember, at the end of the day, encryption or not, Facebook is holding the keys.
Right.
So,
and you know, that's another really important thing, is that the keys are not with you. Whereas if with iMessage, those keys are stored on your actual device in the secure enclave of the iPhone. So there's a difference right there between the two platforms. And that's an impeccable point that you made, Mr. Bistro. And for anyone else wondering out there, that basically means is that if someone has an encryption key, they can read it, and the whole idea of encryption is just moot. So thank you for bringing that up.
Mm-hmm.
Okie dokie. Well, maybe it might be worth having a look at this white paper if you're at all interested in the technical thing, but it is pretty terse. Okay. Well, that's it for tech news, unless there's any other technology-related things you guys would like to mention before moving on.
Nope.
Once, twice, gone. All right. So the skill of the month for July is divination. And Flash is currently in first place with 7.6 million XP gained. Second place, we have Parnassius with 4.4 million. Tim is roughly around 80,000 XP behind at 4.4 million as well. So we do have a close race for second here. Remains to be seen what happens with number two and if Flash can keep up for the rest of the month. We're about halfway through. So it should be very interesting given the fact that this is a primary skill. And oh, look what we got here. We got Mr. Bistro in position number four.
Yeah. Seeing how much Flash has just kind of started dominating is kind of slowed me down a little bit. I don't know. I can't compete.
Yeah. Flash has been gaining anywhere from about 450,000 XP all the way up to a high of around 700,000 XP, and that's been varying daily. And it has been roughly linear compared to everyone else. So Flash is definitely in this to win it, and I believe divination is his favorite skill.
I'd have to say between Flash, Parnassius, and Tim, I just got to give you like props for the amount of experience I've seen you guys gain in one day. It's extremely impressive.
Yeah, Flash's average XP is 585,000. So that's definitely up there. And of course, if anyone is wanting to train divination skill of the month or not, I would like to remind everyone that the Guthixian caches that appear every couple hours are a great way of training, and you can do those once a day, I believe. Or is it twice? Once or twice, not entirely sure.
I think twice.
All right.
If you do it to completion each time.
Okay. So we have some achievements of the week this week. First up is Poison Nova with 99 Invention on the 13th. Then we got a Double Sirion on the 10th of July, 99 Defense, and 99 Farming. He actually waited until I was online to get 99 Farming, so that was nice of him.
Oh, yeah.
And then Trekkie, a.k.a. J1, J2, J3, got 99 Agility on July 8th. So good job to all you guys who received your achievements, and we look forward to hearing more in 2 weeks when we return.
Woo.
So, pick of the week time. Tyler has a pick of the week. It's a secret to me. I don't know what it is, so please let's not have this be something bad.
So my pick of the week is a game that Shane actually introduced me to recently. It's StarCraft Online, or STO.
Star Trek Online, friend.
Oh, sorry.
It's contagious.
We're all going insane. We're all going insane. It's contagious. Oh, God. Oh, God. Yeah, Star Trek Online, STO. It's a game available through Steam, and it's an MMO that's set in the Star Trek universe. I've only been able to play it for maybe like 4 or 5 hours, but I've really enjoyed it thus far.
Oh, good.
And it's really nice because there are a lot of people in the RSBNB community that are playing, so it was fun to have them kind of guiding me, even though one of the things they made me do was find them in a location that was very hard for a new player like me to find them, which was, I'm sure, very enjoyable for them, not so enjoyable for me.
Well, all you got to do is keep your eyes open and pan the camera up.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, free to play. It's been out since 2011? No, 2010. And it's free to play to a large extent until about level 50. And then at that point, you might want to make a small investment in the game of about $20 or so. But beyond that, completely free to play. Yeah, I enjoy it. I'm glad you're enjoying it. It is the game that you play if you want to play something Star Trek related that is officially licensed on the PC by CBS. So the entire universe is available to them, and they have done great things with it so far, as I'm sure you will see going forward. And I don't know why I'm selling the pick of the week that you did, but
to be fair, you were the one who introduced it to me. I haven't gone doing all these fact searching like you have, apparently.
Yeah. So what do you like about it so far, aside from the fact we're all playing it?
I like the space travel, although it's a little, it's a little clunky to me right now, but it is. I can see how it could get really cool. I think it's maybe because at the beginning levels, you have this really newbie ship
that
doesn't really have any bells or whistles. But
yeah, that changes a lot later. But
that's good to hear.
It's also available on the Arc client if you prefer to not use Steam. Though I think playing on the Steam client is probably the way to go over Arc. That's just my personal preference. Or if you had a game that was installed on disk, like mine initially was, you don't use a Steam client. So, yeah. All right. So that's a pick, StarTrekOnline.com. So what have we been doing? Let's start with you, Mr. Beaster. What you been up to this past week?
I've been learning a lot of shopping carts for e-commerce site for when it comes down to the development portion of it. Really looked into Magento, if anyone's heard of Magento. It's like an e-commerce like order system in a fresh out of a box. But the stuff I'm doing is completely in-house and a little bit dated using XML stuff in the SQL, which is very, very tedious.
That's a very technical explanation, but he's basically writing shopping carts, online shopping carts for people.
Yeah, which is very interesting, and I'd say also a very useful skill.
Yeah, and you want to do it securely, right?
Yes, that's really important. But other than that, RuneScape, I've just been doing divination, and I haven't been gaining be really over the past couple days, because I have stopped going for XP and I've started just collecting the energy for when inventor or invention flips over to bonus experience active.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense, I guess. That's a good thing to do. We were noting on our skilling podcast that's coming out next week that incandescent energy is way up there already once again in price, almost to what it was at the first peak. So definitely a good time to be looking at doing that.
I have about 40K of it in my inventory, and that sells for about 16 mil right now.
Excellent. How about you, Tyler? What you been up to on RS?
On RS, I've been doing a lot of Slayer to try to raise up my augmented weapons and armor to get up to my invention level. I'm currently at 70. I'm hoping it will go a little bit faster, but it has not been.
Okay.
Outside of RS, though, I've been doing a lot of Pokemon Go.
Of course you have.
Yep.
Didn't you say you were hunting once for like 3 hours in one evening and walked 20 kilometers?
It wasn't 20 kilometers. It was more like 15, but it was 3 hours of walking, yes.
and see, this is what that game is doing. It's just consuming time and people's shoes everywhere, which I guess is an okay thing.
Yeah.
So, all right. As for me this week, just herb farming, working on getting herb lore up. In addition to that, the Port Sarum event, and also I want to say that I did spend some time, trying to get the various dungeoneering cards out there so I can start getting those potion recipes done, because I really want all those potion recipes and the superior Warmaster potion, but dungeoneering, it just really puts a sour taste in my mouth, that skill, so.
Even today...
Yeah, it does. It really does. I don't know why. It's just nothing I was ever able to get into. So I take whatever shortcuts I can for that. And, I mean, I have no problem with doing that. And I'm still not 100% convinced that dungeoneering is a skill, which we're still belaboring the point 6 years later. So, but... yeah, in addition to that, I would highly recommend that everybody look at the Grand Exchange prices for seeds, because seeds are really low right now, and if you are wanting to make money, herb farming is the way to go, regardless of what certain community members might think in the wider community. So, yeah, that's pretty much it for this week. Anything else before we tie this one off and go find our brain cells that we missed?
You mean you guys. I don't think I slipped up calling anything.
You called an inventor.
Oh, yeah, okay. Did. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I'm deflating right now.
What?
Hot-headed.
Oh, okay. I see. Well, then I am convinced that we can call this episode done, and hopefully you guys have enjoyed this edition of RS Baby Update that was thrown together in a pinch, and we'll be back next week with Dave and Parnassius for a discussion on skills and whether or not they're useful. So that means no question topic next week, but we will be back the week after with questions and a new co-host and doing everything we can humanly do to cover the arc. So with that being said, thank you for sharing your time with us, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Adios.